Greetings from Soundography. Soundography is a crash course in music, one band at a time. I'm Brian Ibbett.
And I am Hammond Chamberlain.
Oh, perfectly done there. I'm done with this episode, Hammond. Done. Just kidding. if that is any indication, and if you forgot what we said last week was going to be our next episode, yes, Megadeth.
Wow, you're as bad as the Academy of Recording Music.
Right? Did they do that once?
Oh, we'll talk about it later.
Oh, wow. All right. Can't wait to get to that. Yeah, Megadeth was our week-long binge listen. And why go any further to say this, but I'm going to say this was maybe the hardest week I've ever had on Soundography. I'm trying to think of another week where I've really slogged through all the music as much of a struggle as it was for me this week.
So even more so than like Mushroomhead and Anthrax?
Even more so than Mushroomhead and Anthrax, yeah. Anthrax, Metallica, enjoyed Iron Maiden, enjoyed all that stuff a lot more.
We haven't done Metallica yet.
Not Metallica, I'm sorry. Iron Maiden is what I was thinking of. Iron Maiden and Anthrax, enjoyed those a lot more. But yeah, this was a tough week, and it is largely in part to the vocals of Dave Mustaine. I feel like if you like him, you like him a lot because it's all of that. But yeah. If you don't like it, then it's a difficult library to get through.
I was just gonna say that I feel very similar. So Megadeth is one of those bands where the hits are the hits for a reason. So like if you buy their greatest hits album, everything you get is gonna be a really good piece of music, and his voice fits it. But then there's the stuff just below the surface. And after album, it starts to become increasingly difficult to listen to, even though they're great musicians and their technical prowess. And I can go on and on about superlatives. But when it boils down to it, Dave's voice is an anomaly.
It is. And you know what? And a band is not made up of a vocalist alone, right? I mean, it's certainly not, I don't want to make it sound like, yeah, the vocalist didn't enjoy the vocals, so the whole thing is bad. I can tell the rest of the band, the guitarists especially, amazing work by them. And if I had an easier time, if there was anything I liked this week, then it was the guitar work, more so than the vocals.
Yeah.
But,
and there's some songs that his voice works perfectly for, like Sweating Bullets and Peace Sells and some of these ones, Symphony of Destruction, they fit.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And the subject matter of their songs is so perfectly matched with Dave Mustaine's voice that I can't argue that that's a big advantage of the band, a big selling point of the band.
But I will say that there are many, many songs that it sounds like he's singing while struggling to battle with constipation.
Definitely does sound like that. And a little inside baseball here, but basically when I put together a show or when I'm listening to the music for an episode of Soundography, I am usually doing it during the day while I'm working, like while I'm working on freelance and stuff. And just about every other band, I've had no problem, even other metal bands, no problem listening to it and being able to pull stuff out that I like while I'm working. This one was just you're forced. You must not do anything else right now but listen to Dave Mustaine's voice. It was so distracting that there were times that it almost made me want to punch the computer.
It actually does grab you by the ears and force you to listen to it, which
it totally does.
Is a benefit of the music. That says something about the music, but it also... Yes. Is a drawback because it is such an attention pull.
Yeah, it's never going to be background stuff. Like, I'm going to put some Megadeth on in the background while I paint the walls. And you're going to come back and find that, you know, the walls are full of holes.
It looks like Rorschach.
It's black. Yeah. It's totally Rorschach. Yes, exactly. So, anyway. So, my critique is not... Oh, they suck. It's a bad band. The critique is simply, you know what? Not for me, but But if you like Megadeth, then hey, more power to you. So let's get into this because, you know, vocals aside, you can't argue that Dave Mustaine was not a big influence on a band that we just mentioned. Megadeth was formed in LA by Dave Mustaine and David Ellefson in 1983 after Dave was unceremoniously kicked out of Metallica. If I understand it, he was kicked out because he wanted to party too hard.
Yeah, basically.
The rest of the band could not keep up with him.
He had some serious substance abuse issues, and so they kicked him out of the band. And he went home and was like, you know what? I'm going to make a band that's harder, faster, mm-hmm. and is more popular and more devastatingly heavy than Metallica ever will be.
Right. And you know, the competition on that, what it brings out is usually really good results. Mm-hmm. Didn't he also, so he kind of helps set the sound of the original sound of Metallica.
Uh-huh.
Kind of first couple albums.
Yeah, their first couple albums has a bunch of songs written by Mustaine on them. And if you go, we'll bring this up a couple times, but there are songs throughout the Megadeth library that borrow heavily on some of those early Metallica riffs. And in some cases, it's just flat, just uses them.
Really? Interesting. Okay. Megadeth would become one of the big four of American thrash metal, along with Anthrax, Slayer, and Metallica. Dave had been one of the primary composers for Metallica, as we mentioned in the early days. His influence was felt all the way up through the Master of Puppets album. That, as Hammond mentioned, he vowed revenge. I'll get you, Lars! And he wanted to form a faster, heavier band. And although Mustaine and Ellefson had gelled, they had to find a drummer that could understand and keep up. And that proved to be a harder role to fill.
And like we said, his voice is something we've already kind of discussed, and we're not going to probably bring it up again unless it's something we do in the our lists or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I think at one point I called him Dave Mustrain.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Okay, that'll be all. Lee Rausch was finally selected, and after looking for a singer, Dave decided to fill the role himself.
I will throw this out. Dave wrote a book, autobiography, a few years back. And to be honest with you, it's a hell of a read. And he's an articulate and intelligent dude. And there's a section in there that when I remember very distinctly, I was sitting at my job at the jail in between interviewing people. And he describes this concert where one of the guitar players falls through a hole in the stage. And I was laughing out loud, holding a book in my hand while I was reading. Because he describes it so perfectly and so humorously. So if you have any desire to learn about him and his kind of drive and who he is, I highly recommend this book.
Interesting. Who is he their principal songwriter as well?
Yeah, it's pretty much Dave Mustaine and the Megadeths.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay, so it's not just lead vocalist, but he's kind of... So, the fact that he's articulate doesn't surprise me because I do feel like the songwriting, the lyric writing is really, really excellent with the band. Like that's another one of the strengths that I can recognize, in the band. So very cool. 1984, they recorded a 3-song demo that they called Last Rites. It contained Last Rites, Love to Death, The Skull Beneath the Skin, and Mechanics.
Now, Mechanics will sound familiar to people who listen to Metallica because it's really the Four Horsemen, and he just took his riff back and wrote Mechanics, and they slowed it down and turned it into the Four Horsemen.
Wow, I didn't know that. Okay, that's really cool.
Yeah.
This is my riff. I'm taking it back.
I'm going to take my riff and go home.
That's right. Yes. Love that. Kerry King of Slayer filled in on guitar for a short time, and Gar Samuelson took over on drums, and Chris Poland also joined on guitar. The first album was 1985's Killing Is My Business and Business Is Good. I do like their album titles are great. The puns, the phrases like this. This feels like, I mentioned Panic at the Disco pre-show because we were talking about other things and said, you know, the Panic at the Disco style of title writing is second to none. I would say the same thing about Metallica's album titling.
Yeah. This is Megadeth.
I'm sorry, did I say Metallica again?
Yeah.
All right. Keep track, folks. Let's see how many more times I do it.
Oh, I'm not cutting these out then? I was going to save you and cut them out.
Oh, are you gonna, if you want to cut them out, you
can. I don't care. I just...
I'd say leave them in. Leave them in.
All right. All right.
Let's see what happens when we eventually get to our Metallica episode if I keep calling them Slayer. We'll see. Anyway, they recorded the album for $8,000. They spent half of that on drugs, alcohol, and food. They then fired the producer and finished the recording themselves.
The original record did not sound great, but it found an audience in the real metal world. I mean, it was really lo-fi and felt very DIY. And at the time, that's kind of what people were listening to. I mean, the new wave of British heavy metal was just making it over, and that kind of rough and ready sound was actually what people were looking for, and so it fit right in.
Yeah, and I can see why. It's straight ahead. You know, it's a straight ahead, straightforward metal sound. The cover of the album introduced the world to Vic Rattlehead. See the artist? He's the artist who did all their album covers?
No, that's their mascot guy.
Oh, really? Okay, so they've got the hooks in his mouth. Mascot guy, kind of like Eddie and...
Yep. And I've got a Vic Rattlehead figure hanging on my wall.
You know, it's funny. I didn't even realize that their... I'm going to look back at their album covers now. Sorry. I did not realize that they predominantly featured the same. Oh yeah, right. It's the skeleton with the
metal eyepieces and the hooks in his mouth.
Yes. Okay. I did know this. Okay. His name is Vic Rattlehead. I love it.
Yep. Boy, this week really did take advantage of you, didn't it?
It really did. It turned my brain to mush, man. I'm telling you. I don't know why. The album contained a cover of These Boots Were Made for Walkin'. They had made some lyrical changes that in the 90s, Lee Hazlewood called vile and offensive. It was removed from pressing from 1995 all the way to 2001. We're going to probably talk about that later, I'm guessing. In 1986, they released the album Peace Sells, But Who's Buying? Mustaine composed the music while band members helped in the arrangements.
This is listed as one of the 1001 albums that you must listen to before you die. And I will tell you, I fully endorse that statement.
Yeah, for me, right before I die.
Well, you've already done it now.
I've already done it, but it'd be the one that I listen to as my car is driving off the cliff because I can't concentrate on the road while it's playing. This album sounds so much better and shows a more sophisticated songwriting ability than Killing Is My Business. Welcome to our sanguinary sect of worship. Feel at home in our black and winter girl as we net days all those who oppose us. Don't summon the devil. Don't call the priest. The title track was the lead single and had a video that got regular airplay on MTV.
The opening bass line for Peace Sells was the lead-in for the MTV News for years.
Yeah. They then started on a long tour cycle, which lasted more than 72 weeks. At the end of the tour, Samuelson and Poland were asked to leave the band.
Okay, we'll get this out of the way too. Yeah. There's a long history of substance abuse and other afflictions that have bothered this band and followed this band. Sure. Dave was kicked out of Metallica for it. You know, people were in and out of Megadeth for it. It just keeps going and going and going. But we're not going to, I mean, it probably will crop up a couple of times because you can't help it. Yeah. But for the most part, we're not going to dwell on this. It's kind of like when we were talking about Ozzy. It's a thing. We know it's a thing. We acknowledge it's a thing, but we're not going to dwell on the thing.
I like it. Okay. So that works for me. Totally fine with that. And Jeff Young and Chuck Baylor replaced Samuelson in Poland. In 1988, So Far, So Good, So What? Initially, I thought from the name of this, I was expecting it to be like a greatest hits kind of thing. It's a great greatest hits album title. The album took over 5 months to record, mostly due to Mustaine's own addiction issues. It also contained a cover, this time of the Sex Pistols' Anarchy in the UK.
He had changed the lyrics, but later he said that he hadn't just not heard them correctly, which, you know what? I've heard the song. I don't know the lyrics.
No, I think it's totally, that's totally believable. So there's a lot of songs out there that if I were asked to do a cover of it, I would probably do the same things like, yeah, these are what I think are the lyrics.
So, Brian, you had a very apropos review of the...
I did.
So why don't you go ahead and give that?
Yeah, I felt like their cover was just Anarchy in the UK.
There we go. Which means it could be Oklahoma or you're just it.
Yeah, it's all right. Yeah. I don't have a problem with lyric changes, obviously, because I liked These Boots Are Made for Walking. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's the fact that These Boots Are Made for Walking becomes such a different song with them behind it, whereas Anarchy in the UK just changes a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
And that could be what you had with No More Mr. Nice Guy and some of the other stuff.
Right, right. For sure. School's Out, No More Mr. Nice Guy. They did two Alice Cooper covers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Actually, I think about it. They then went on an eight-month tour that saw them share the stage with Savatage, Dio, Iron Maiden, Testament, and others.
We got to cover Savatage sometime, especially since they grew up to be the Trans-Siberian Orchestra.
Sure. Sure. I'll give them a shot. Penelope Spheeris put them in the movie The Decline of Western Civilization Part 2, The Metal Years. She had directed the video for Wake Up Dead, and she wanted to feature them as a more serious metal band. But in the end, Dave was just upset because it showed them with, quote, a bunch of shit bands.
So I will tell you, I just rewatched this movie. It's on Amazon Prime. And I just rewatched it recently, like within the last, I'd say, 4 weeks.
Yeah.
And it's a really hard movie to watch because of one, just how silly and pompous and stupid they are. But there's one scene in there with a guy who's just getting hammered in a pool. And it's just hard to watch. It's like watching a car accident in slow motion.
I'm not sure I want to check that out based on that review.
Well, maybe it's like, something we watch for the Patreon only thing sometime.
Maybe. We'll give you some time since you just watched it.
Yeah.
Again, a turnover on staff at drums and lead guitar. Nick Menza was brought in on drums, but they couldn't find a new guitarist yet. In My Darkest Hour was written after Dave heard about the death of Cliff Burton, Metallica's bass player, a guy that he introduced to Metallica and brought in. And the band got together and recorded a cover of No More Mr. Nice Guy for the 1989 landmark horror movie, Shocker, starring X-Files director Skinner, Mitch Pileggi.
I didn't know you thought so highly of that movie, Brian.
Oh, yes. What's funny is, I don't know, I'll be honest, I don't know if I've ever seen it because when it's come up as an opportunity to watch, I've held off because I figure, oh, we're going to watch this for film sex.
So okay, I'll be really honest with you. I actually thoroughly enjoy that film.
Do you?
Yeah, I thoroughly do. Yeah. But then again, I don't like it because it's a great horror movie. I like it because it's a veiled knockoff of every other 80s horror movie that came out.
Sure. I believe it. It's one that I know as soon as it's streaming, we're going to watch for film set. Because, I mean, how could you not? Mitch Pileggi, director Skinner from The X-Files, cheesy premise. It's made for film set. Oh, it's made for Sacken.
Yeah. This film was made for Sacken, and that's just what we'll do.
Exactly where I was going with that. In 1989, Dave was arrested for a DUI after crashing into a parked car. Occupied by an off-duty police officer. Oops.
Yeah, we really are trying to stay away from the substance abuse drama, I promise.
It's hard to with all the stuff that's going on. In 1990, they released the album Rust in Peace. Marty Friedman took over.
Slash, Dimebag from Pantera, and Chris Oliva from Sabotage were all offered the job. Two of the three are dead now. Marty was in a band called Cacophony. And if you're unfamiliar with Cacophony, stop this podcast and go look it up, mark it, come back and listen to it when we're done.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's two guitar players who are insanely talented, just nothing but musical pyrotechnics, and it's stupid good.
Okay. Yeah, I'm familiar with Cacophony. I'd be honest, I probably wouldn't figure it'd be something I'd like based on the name. But
I actually called it Cacophony for a long time before I learned the word for real.
Cacophony. Oh, geez. All right.
True story.
The lineup for Rust in Peace was considered by many to be the definitive Megadeth lineup. Without question, it's their most critically acclaimed album.
Also made the list of 1,001 albums to listen to before you die.
There you go. The making of Rust in Peace is called Rusted Pieces. It was released in 1991 on home video. The singles were Holy Wars, Punishment is Due, and Hangar 18.
You know what Hangar 18 is a reference to?
The movie about an alien spaceship discovery.
Well, basically, Hangar 18 is actually at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and it's considered the place where all the information from Roswell and all the information on that kind of stuff, UFO stuff, is taken.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay. So, yeah. So that's obviously what the movie's about. Okay. Let's see. The album debuted at number 23 in the United States and number 8 in the UK.
The songs contained time signature changes. It was more progressive, had a more complex edge than previous albums had.
Makes sense. And then the song Go to Hell was featured in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, the one with death, soon to be a trilogy. In 1992, the band released Countdown to Extinction. This would have been Megadeth's most commercially successful album, and there are songwriting credits given to each member of the band.
This received a Grammy nomination, first of many.
Very cool. But didn't win, huh?
No.
Bummer. Entered the charts at number 2 in the United States, and the title track won a Genesis Award from the Humane Society for raising awareness for animal rights. In 1993, they entered the studio after touring with Rob Zombie and Pantera to record Angry Again for the F. Murray Abraham vehicle Last Action Hero. And later that year, they recorded 99 Ways to Die for the Beavis and Butthead film. They also recorded a cover of Paranoid for Nativity in Black.
And we covered Nativity in Black some when we talked about Trent Reznor earlier this season.
We certainly did. Yep. 1994, they released Euthanasia. For this album, they built their own studio in Arizona to record. It was called Fat Planet in Hangar 18. The tracks on this album are slower than prior releases. They are only at about 120 BPM. They focused more on melody and stronger vocals and a more radio-friendly arrangement for the songs. A making of was released called Evolver, The Making of Euthanasia. It was released in 1995. This album debuted at number 4 on the charts, and they played a live show on MTV, appeared on Letterman twice. Sung Diadems appeared on the soundtrack for the Billy Zane led classic film Demon Knight. I do love your embellishments for all of these movies, by the way. Don't think that it hasn't gone unnoticed.
In between Euthanasia and Cryptic Writing, Dave worked on an album called MD45. From the dust of which I came, to dust I return again. From my mother I am torn, with my brothers off to war. We escaped before the dawn, trying to... Which was actually pretty good. It was kind of a little bit of a departure, but if you're interested at all, listen to a song or two. And if it's your cup of tea, then great. If not, move on. But I kind of enjoyed it. And then Marty Friedman also recorded a solo album at the same time.
1997, Cryptic Writings was released. It reached number 10 on the Billboard 100. Trust was the biggest single that Megadeth had, reaching number 5 on the mainstream rock charts. It was even nominated for a Grammy.
This album featured a wide range of musical styles and influences, and it's my favorite in their catalog.
Oh, wow. Cool. In 1999, Risk, this album is seen as a commercial and critical failure, and the band saw fan backlash like it had never seen before, which is interesting because you'd think that if they were going to get it, they would have gotten from kind of the more mainstream sound of Euthanasia.
But this went totally in this weird kind of techno, lots of electronic instruments kind of direction, and okay. It's Risk is an okay song, but the rest of the album really isn't. Very good. I mean, what do you think? Please tell me it was your favorite. Please tell me it was your favorite.
Oh, it definitely was not my favorite. No, we're actually haven't gotten to my favorite of their albums yet. I did have a favorite of their albums.
Okay.
But this wasn't it. So like you said, the album was seen as lacking the thing that made Megadeth, which was metal.
Yeah.
The song Crush'em made it on the soundtrack to the venerable action tour de force, Universal Soldier.
I'm so glad you're just reading this straight.
Totally, absolutely. Well, until I see the pattern, until the pattern emerges, and then I'm expecting it.
It was also used by hockey teams and at wrestling events.
In 1999, they did a cover of Never Say Die for the second Nativity in Black album. After the tour, Friedman left and Al Petrelli of Savatage and the Trans-Siberian Orchestra stepped in. Capital Punishment, The Megadeth Years, was released in 2000. It contained two new songs, Kill the King and Dread and Fugitive Mind.
Okay, I have to tell you, Kill the King is a great song. I don't care what you think. I love Kill the King.
You know what? I might have skipped that one because I usually don't do the greatest hits. I didn't realize there were two new tracks on there. So I'm going to go back and listen to it when we're done here. Okay. I don't think it's going to change my playlist, but I'll go back and give it a listen.
Yeah.
Days before the next album was released, VH1's Behind the Music covered Megadeth's history up to that point. The next point being 2001's The World Needs a Hero. This album debuted at number 16 on the Billboard album charts. It was actually my favorite of all of their albums. The album was banned in Malaysia because they said the artwork was, quote, not suitable for the nation's youth. This was a return to Megadeth's aggression, their sound. The lead singer was Moto Psycho. Love that. It reached number 22 on the rock charts. In 2002, Rude Awakening, a live DVD, was released. And also that same year, Dave was diagnosed with radial neuropathy, and could not grasp or make a fist with his left hand. He disbanded Megadeth because he could no longer play. And after exhaustive physical therapy, he relearned how to use his hand. Still alive and well, 2002 is a question mark. A compilation album mixing various live recordings and tracks from The World Needs a Hero. This was released to fulfill an obligation to the label. And in 2003, Dave worked on the remasters and remixes of all the Capitol recordings, re-recording sections that had been altered or deleted in the original mix. 2004, The System Has Failed. This album started as a solo project, but because of obligation to EMI Europe, it was released as a Megadeth album.
So this is where I kind of the joke about Dave Mustaine and the Megadeths. He's really the driving force behind this group. He's the main songwriter. He's the main lyric writer. He's the vocalist. He's the mastermind behind all of it. And I feel like it's kind of always been a solo project, even though like Dave Ellefson comes in and out quite frequently, has been with him a long time. Chris Poland has come back and forth. I just feel like Dave's the only constant in it. So I'm trying to figure out if this was always a solo project for him in some way.
It may have been. Because it's such a revolving door of the other band members. Again, this is seen as a return to form. Debuted at number 18 on the U.S. album charts. Die Dead Enough, the single, peaked at number 21 on the mainstream rock charts. Then they released a greatest hits album, which was called Back to the Start in 2005, remixed and remastered tracks picked by fans.
Iron Maiden did that. They had the fan-picked greatest hits album.
I like that. Yeah, because you know that for the most part, they're probably going to pick the things that you'd expect them to pick. You know, like they're probably going to pick the singles that did the well, that did the best, that charted the most. From 2005 to 2008, and then again, 2012 to 2013, they organized the Gigantour.
Yep. Not only was Megadeth in that, but Lamb of God, Opeth, Arch Enemy, Overkill, and who else, Brian? Who else was in that?
Oh, I'm going to guess. I'm going to take a drink right now because it's Dream Theater.
Yep. Very good. Good guess.
Here we go. Here's my drink. People can hear I'm actually drinking for this. Arsenal of Megadeth was a 2-DVD set full of interviews, live clips, and behind-the-scenes footage of the band. In 2007, they released United Abominations. Mustaine said that the metal needed an old school record again, or that metal needed an old school record again. And he felt like this was it.
Also contained a new version of A Tout Le Monde, which is his song about suicide. But this time it was a duet with Christina Scabbia of Lacuna Coil, which I'm a big fan of Lacuna Coil.
Yeah, I am too. Surprisingly. This album debuted at number 8 on the album charts. In 2007, they released That One Night Live in Buenos Aires. And in 2007 also, they released War Chest.
And War Chest is a hard-to-find, highly sought-after box set that I still won't pay that much money to get.
Is it B-sides, rarities?
Yeah, it's kind of an all-encompassing look at their history with lots of extra stuff. And I don't have that kind of money.
Yeah. I get it. Who does? Who does, Hammond? In 2008, they released an anthology called Set the World on Fire. 2009, Endgame was released. Head Crusher was nominated for a Grammy, and it was their 8th nomination in 19 years. And it was met with solid reviews. In 2010, they went back to their old library and did Rest in Peace Live. A couple of years, or actually the same year, they released The Big Four Live from Sofia, Bulgaria.
So The Big Four Live was a series of concerts that they did with The Big Four. It was Slayer, Anthrax, Metallica, and Megadeth all touring. And this was kind of the beginning of the axe being buried with the whole Lars Metallica thing.
So it was really, I mean, it really was a genuine feud. It wasn't like a friendly kind of Neil Young versus the Allman Brothers.
No. This was real deal. Yeah. I think he really wanted to basically bring him down. And he did everything he could. And when you balance it out, I think he had a lot more commercial success throughout. Mm-hmm. I mean, Metallica became the biggest band in the world after the Black Album. But he had singles and he was charting well and he continues to chart well. I mean, you could balance it out. And as far as output goes, he's been in movie soundtracks. He's done, you know, all this extra stuff. And as far as output goes, he's way output Metallica.
Wow. Yeah, that's definitely true. And boy, a show like that where you've got Slayer, Anthrax, Megadeth, and Metallica, that is an incredible lineup. I mean, that really would be like in the late 60s, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, the Beach Boys, and
The Who,
like all performing together at one show.
Yep.
That'd be amazing. Sudden Death was a song commissioned by the publishers of Guitar Hero for their Warriors of Rock edition.
And that too was nominated for a Grammy in 2011.
I'm guessing we're going to get to, when we talk about awards and accolades and things like that, I hear a lot of nominations, but I want to hear if they ever won any of these Grammys.
We'll get to it. We'll get to it.
Yeah. 2011, they released 13, their 13th album. It was recorded in their own studio, Vic's Garage. This featured the tracks Sudden Death and Never Dead. Appropriately enough, this got to number 11 on the album charts, being released in 2011.
The single Public Enemy number 1 was also nominated for a Grammy.
The suspense, him. Oh my gosh, I don't know if I could take it. In 2013, they released Super Collider. This one debuted at number 6 on the album charts. They, you know, you can say that even with albums that the fans weren't big fans of, they kept that momentum going, and their releases always debut really high on
them. Oh yeah, I mean, the people who love them will go out and buy them on day one just to support the band.
Yeah, and if anybody out there that's listening, that's still listening, is a fan of Metallica, I hope I haven't
made
people quit.
That's Megadeth.
<That's, laughs> okay, only twice. I got to say I'm doing pretty well. People out there who are still listening, who are fans of Megadeth, that's, you know, again, more high praise for me. That it's a, I acknowledge how good the band is. The critics, though, were pretty hard on this album. Countdown to Extinction Live 2013 was celebrating the 20th anniversary of that album.
And they also reissued that album in 2014.
I think that was the one I listened to because all of the Apple Music stuff was the bonus track editions of a lot of those older albums. So you got demos and things like that. And then Icon was released in 2014. The most recent full album was 2016's Dystopia. Fatal Illusion was streamed in late 2015 to help promote the release of the album.
The title track won the Grammy for the Best Hard Rock Heavy Metal this year, but during the ceremony, the house band played Master of Puppets instead, which, by the way, is a Metallica song, so duh.
Yeah, exactly. And, boy, it's like I work for... this is like
the, it's like you read ahead.
The Grammy. Yeah, exactly. That's sad. I'm sorry.
I also wanted to bring up that the orb on their artwork, the little police orb, looks a lot like the orb thingies on the Dream Theater's The Astonishing album. And I was wondering if they were in the same universe. And if you're not familiar, Brian, go ahead and pull up both.
Those are cool. They kind of look like things out of the Portal game as well.
Mm-hmm. And now pull up the Dream Theater one so you can prove that I'm not a liar.
Okay. All right. Have they always had the same artist, by the way?
Who? Megadeth?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think they have different artists for each album.
Oh, yeah. The Astonishing. Uh-huh. It totally looks like the same thing.
Yeah.
Their orbs are cleaner, but smoother, but pretty damn close.
Yeah.
If you ask me.
Yep. Wow. I think they're in the same universe.
Totally are in the same
universe. One street level and one's higher up in the higher buildings of Coruscant.
And version 2.0.
Well, I was just going to say one's at the street level of Coruscant and the other's at the upper levels of Coruscant.
Gotcha. Work on the Megadeth project came to a halt in June of 2019 when it was announced that Dave had throat cancer. They released the compilation Warheads on Foreheads 2019, another really great album title. And yeah. There's talk of a 2020 tour had started, but come on, it doesn't take a genius to look around and see what's going on and probably say that's not going to happen this year.
Yeah. So the Warheads album, it's 3 discs. And if you're going to buy a Megadeth album and you're not a fan, this might be the one to get because it covers all the highlights. I mean, everything that was a single plus all just the songs that were good. This is about as a comprehensive of a collection as you can get without diving into stuff that's kind of, I don't want to call it album filler, but album filler.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it looked like a good set. And obviously when we link to an album on soundography.com, that will be the one we link to.
Yeah. It's a good one. That's it's a really good expect. One.
Hammond, tell me about the statistics and general notes. I know we got one Grammy. Do we have more?
Well, Rust in Peace was nominated for a Grammy and it was their third platinum album up to that point. In 1988, he single-handedly started a riot at a show in Ireland between Protestants and Catholics. Because he made some comment off the stage and all of a sudden all hell broke loose.
Oh, wow.
Two songs were banned because of worries about encouraging suicide, Atula Mund and In My Darkest Hour. And In My Darkest Hour was actually about the death of Cliff Burton, not about suicide per se. Atula Mund basically is a suicide note, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
Megadeth songs Looking Down the Cross, Mechanics, In My Darkest Hour, Hangar 18, Dawn Patrol, This Was My Life, She-Wolf, FFF, When Go to Hell, Dread and the Fugitive Mind, Skin of My Teeth, Sweating Bullets, all have riffs or an intro or an entire song that can be argued to have a relative in the Metallica catalog. And there are some of them are really, really obvious, and some of them are sped up, slowed down, different time signatures, but the riff itself is still the same. And so some of them are very much, oh yeah, that's like the Mechanics and the Four Horsemen. There's no debating that.
Are all those from the early part of Metallica's catalog or?
Yes, they're throughout the Megadeth catalog, but they're all from the first three albums of the Metallica catalog.
Metallica stuff, yeah. Okay. Wow. Jeez, you'd think that with the feud going on, they'd be like, all right, let's not use that because I think Dave might have come up with that one.
Well, that's the thing is, I mean, like I said, he got writing credits up through Master of Puppets.
Oh, true. Right. So even if they did use, okay.
Yeah, so they did their changes to him. Like they slowed down the Mechanic to make the Four Horsemen Fight Fire with Fire or, you know, there are others that are in there. So they made their changes so that it wasn't identical. But I mean, if you listen to both bands, which most people would, you're going to go, oh yeah, that's a Dave Mustaine riff.
Let's say you get to see Megadeth in concert, whether it's part of that big four or not. There's going to be one song that you're guaranteed to hear. What is Megadeth's Stairway to Heaven song? Hammond, what are our choices?
So I made up a list of Symphony of Destruction, which actually, if you listen to the lyrics now, it's even more fitting than it was when he wrote it when Bush was in office.
Yeah.
I picked Wake Up Dead. Wake Up Dead, Trust, Sweating Bullets, and my choice is Peace Cells. I think Peace Cells is it.
You were absolutely right. Peace Cells, their most common song played in concert, with 1,597 performances in concert, followed by Holy Wars, Hangar 18, Symphony of Destruction, In My Darkest Hour, Wake Up Dead, Trust, Sweating Bullets, Tulamon, and Tornado of Souls, rounding out the top 10. Their most played cover in concert is Anarchy in the UK, followed by These Boots Are Made for Walkin' and Paranoid, which are all ones that they've released officially. So nothing, no covers being performed or frequently performed in concert that aren't things that they haven't released studio versions of. Yeah. Speaking of covers, it's the part of Soundography where we talk about covers that we would like to hear the band hear. I'm going to go first. This one came to me because it was a song that came up mixed in as I would take a break from listening to Megadeth albums. I'd listen to other things. And the song And She Was by the Talking Heads, or just by Talking Heads, came up. And it reminded me that I'd always wanted to hear a metal version of this song. I feel like it's ripe for a metal version. And I feel like this would actually be something that Megadeth could make work really, really well.
I like your notes that even Megadeth could make this work.
Even Megadeth could make this work. I know, I was trying to be diplomatic in the way I read that. But yes, even Megadeth could make it work. So I think it'd be really cool, actually, to have them do that.
All right.
What's your choice?
So I picked one where we don't need to hear Dave's voice. They've done instrumentals before. And as we've said, I'm not a huge fan of his voice all the time. Mm-hmm. So I picked Rhapsody in Blue by George Gershwin. Now,
very interesting choice.
I don't want to hear them just race through it. I want to hear them hit the moods. I want to hear them the time signatures, but I want to hear them hit the moments that make this awesome. And I think with how technically savvy they are, how musical savvy they are, and how they can create their own version of things, I actually think this would be pretty cool. And I know they've got the chops to do it. It's just the desire or the time or wherewithal to do it. But I feel like this is something they could do and do very successfully.
I think so too. I think that actually is a really good choice. I like it. I like it a lot. I like it. I really like it when metal bands do covers of classical music.
I mean, I've got Rhapsody on Blue played on a harmonica. So, oh, wow. So it can be done in different versions. So I would love to hear them, you know, metal it up, but also use the moods and the time changes and stuff to really create something new and impressive.
I like the version that you hear when you fly into O'Hare Airport and you go through the tunnel that connects the B and C terminals. Because that's the United terminal, mm-hmm. and that's they have that thing on a loop in this cool disco neon tunnel.
Oh, cool!
Yeah. Not a heavy metal version though by any or the harmonica version. It's just the original. It's a take on the original version that kind of fits with all the neon and electronic stuff you see around. Let's talk about our playlist. This is where we pick a few songs that sometimes five, sometimes more, sometimes less. That we found the band, and it's you know, I've kind of alluded to it, but it was a difficult week for me to listen, or a difficult week for me to get through. Just wasn't a fan of the music, so I actually only had three songs in my list that that really stood out to me. It's really hard for me to pass up a good cover, and I feel like These Boots Were Made for Walking is a really good cover, even with the lyric changes. Like I said, I don't mind lyric changes in songs like that. And it's hard for me to pass up a cover where the band has such a unique style and they completely fit the cover into that style. So These Boots Are Made for Walking from Business is Good. Second one comes from the Countdown album. It's called Sweating Bullets. Just listening through, this one caught my attention as something different, something that it kind of made me pay attention, which I really like. The whole thing made me pay attention, but this one kind of felt like a breath of fresh air. Most valued possession. Hindsight is always 20/20, but looking back, it's still a bit fuzzy. Speak of mutually assured destruction. Nice story. Talk big, gotcha. And then the number three is A Thousand Times Goodbye. This one from We Need a Hero. Which is a really funny breakup song, complete with a female narrator, so to speak, giving you every single possible breakup trope in the book.
Yeah. And I had a personal bet with myself that you would pick this song.
Well, there's no way to lose a personal bet with yourself.
Oh, I know. But I just, it was something that as soon as I heard it, I'm like, I can't pick this because Brian's going to.
I'm glad you left that one for me because I heard it and was like, okay, I kind of like this. I like the tongue-in-cheek. It took itself less seriously than a lot of their other stuff. And maybe that was the breath of fresh air that I needed.
Yeah. And the rhythmic, I can understand why the rhythmic changes in Sweating Bullets really hit you because it's it's got this skippy two-step rhythm to it.
Yes. Yeah. It felt so different. Like a swing, almost like a swing track.
Yeah. It's a super upbeat song, sounding song about mental illness.
Yeah. Right. Right.
For reference to that, listen to Hollywood Undead.
Yeah. Plenty of that. All right, Hammond, you tell me about your choices.
So I actually had one extra. So that kind of balances a little bit.
Perfect. Yeah. Almost.
All right. So my first one, it's a hit. I'm not going to make any qualms about it. It's Cryptic Writings. This is one of my all-time favorite intros. It's got this huge rhythmic drum section that just fills up the room when you're listening to it. It's probably my favorite intro. It might even fall into my favorite song of theirs.
Wow.
Next is Wake Up Dead. This is the very first Megadeth song I ever heard. Someone made me a mixtape. And this was the third song on that mixtape. And it was the first song I didn't recognize. And when I heard it, I'm like, whoa, this is dark. They're talking about waking up dead. I creep in my bedroom. Slip in the bed. I know if I wake her, I'll wake you up. And I was in high school and this is cool. So I went out and bought B-Cells the very next day. And I have been a fan, less so of them than of other people in the Big Four, but still a fan enough to buy and know enough about them to enjoy them. So yeah, Wake Up Dead. Next one I picked was Use the Man from Cryptic Writing, another pick from Cryptic. The way he uses his lyrics to build up and then how it crashes again is really, really cool in the chorus. This also starts out with a weird intro on the original album where they play Needles and Pens.
The Searchers song?
Uh-huh. And then it...
How did I miss that?
Because it's not on the remaster.
Oh, it's on the... Gotcha, okay.
It's on the original release. Yeah, I'll link it to you on YouTube or something. Let's see, where was I? Oh, Lying in State from Dystopia. This riff is just amazing. The video is also really cool. Also, you got to remember by this time, these guys aren't young. They're older dudes playing this speed, this technicality with this kind of aggression still. And that's one of the things that I've noticed about metal bands is as they age, that piss and vinegar that they had made them scary and aggressive and kind of fight for everything in their first few albums. It tends to wear off as they get swimming pools and big houses.
They get really bitch about the man when the man is paying.
So
all
the
their
fact
bills.
That the fact that Dave Mustaine can still do that in spite of all the success is actually kind of cool because it means that he's really kind of sticking to who he is, which I admire. Also, the solo and the dynamics of it are just really cool. So, Flying in State. My fifth one is Back in the Day from The System Has Failed. This one was featured on Duck Dodgers. In Space, No One Can Hear You Rock.
Wait, don't you mean incredibly awesome animated film, Duck Dodgers? Actually, the animation, of all the ones you've named, this is probably the best, yeah, the best one, right?
Yeah, the landmark animation special in Duck Dodgers. Yeah, it's from the episode No One Can Hear You Rock. It's got melody. It's got all the trademarks of metal, and the skills of it. Just they're just it's awesome what he does with the intro and stuff. And my last one, my sixth pick, is 13 from the album 13.
Times I went to the well to draw my thoughts. I'll gather and tell like bricks that I've laid to build my life. Those that crumble only.
And the reason I picked it, it's very different. It's got a different mood. It's got a different feel. It's slower. It's almost him and a guitar. And it seems to be a super personal song from Dave about his world, his life, and his point of view. And I really, really like how it stood out. It's kind of like a Tout Le Monde against the rest of the catalog really stands out for its change in tempo. This was that, but even more personal.
It's cool. I like stuff like that. I like when people can recognize, you know a band well enough to be able to recognize something like that. So very good. Excellent. Well, that wraps up Megadeth. I almost said Metallica. I really didn't. I was going to say Megadeth the whole time. But so I only messed up twice, I think.
Yeah, a couple times. Unless that's not bad.
Unless there was a time that neither of us got.
Well, and you didn't do it as bad as the Grammys house band. So hey.
Yeah. See. Okay. There's a plus for sure.
If one of your picks had been one, then we would have had a problem.
Enter Sandman, one of my favorite Megadeth songs of all time. Kind of funny, especially considering how, you know, to get those two bands confused when there used to be so much animosity.
Well, actually, in the movie Some Kind of Monster, there's a section in there where the therapist that was helping Metallica sits down with Dave and they go into how it affected him in real life and how people on the streets would walk up to him and say horrible things to him.
Wow, just because...
So there's that too.
Okay. That's crazy. All right, well, let's talk about next week. Hammond, who are we going to be listening to for the next 7 days?
Well, Priscilla, our frequent sponsor, has sponsored another show, and it's Gorgle Bordello.
Gorgle Bordello, which we're both going to have a hard time saying.
Yes.
Next week when we record this. Gorgle Bordello.
Luckily, you have a lot more reading to do than I do.
Oh, well, really?
Yeah, because I've already done the notes. I know that you're going to have to say the name more than I do.
There's a lot of... Oh, I see what you're saying. I'm going to have to say that name a lot. GB. We're going to call him GB for short. Hey, another... GB's third album was called blah, blah, blah.
We'll just call it The Bordello.
The Bordello. Sure. Excellent. Well, I can't wait for that. I don't know anything about this band, so I'm really looking forward to coming into this.
I didn't either until I did the show notes. And while doing the show notes, I pre-listened and I did the listening and my picks. And it's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I'm all for interesting. I'm all for the path not taken musically. So I can't wait to hear what this is. And maybe I'll be able to come up with more than three songs that I like from Gorgle Bordello. Hey, if you want to reach out to us and tell me how wrong I am for not liking Megadeth as much as you do, listen, not for me, but maybe you want to reach out and tell me what I might have missed and something to give another shot to, email us at soundographypodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. We are at The Soundography. Our website is soundography.com. You'll find every episode we've ever recorded right there, along with our playlists, linked to Spotify, Amazon, a link to where you can pick up an album that we recommend from the band, as well as a place to leave your comments in the show notes for any episode. We love seeing that as well. You can support us on Patreon. We are putting out Patreon episodes about every month or so, once a month, where we review a movie that is music focused. Maybe it's a concert film. Maybe it's a movie that is just very, very focused on music. So stick around for that. If you are a patron, you're going to get those automatically in your feed along with all of the other episodes. Hammond's been doing a great job of making sure that you get every episode as they're finished up in the feed. And of course, leave your reviews wherever you get your podcasts. Let other people know that you like Soundography so that they can discover it too. We love seeing those reviews when we see them as well. Hammond, anything else to close us out on this episode about Megadeth?
No, I'm just glad. I'm glad you survived.
I did. I made it through. Came out clean on the other side.
And I'm also, as we move into next season, I'm very leery about the next one in the Big Four.
Right. Yes.
Because it's not Metallica, and we've already covered
Metallica,
and we've already covered Anthrax.
Exactly. All right. Well, then, on behalf of Hammond Chamberlain, this is Brian Emmett saying thanks for listening. We'll see you next time, right here on Soundography.
Network. Get more at frogpants.com.